This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. Officials in Pakistan say that deaths from widespread flooding have topped 1,000 since mid-June, and the country's climate minister called the deadly monsoon season a serious climate catastrophe. Flash flooding from the heavy rains has washed away villages and crops as soldiers and rescue workers evacuated stranded residents to the safety of relief camps and provided food to thousands of displaced Pakistanis. Country's National Disaster Management Authority reported Sunday the death toll since the monsoon season began earlier than normal this year. In mid-June, deaths reached 1,061 people after new fatalities were reported in several different provinces. Russia and Ukraine traded claims of rocket and artillery strikes at or near Europe's largest nuclear power plant on Sunday, intensifying fears that the fighting could cause a massive radiation leak. Ukraine's Atomic Energy Agency painted an ominous picture of the threat Sunday by issuing a map forecasting where radiation could spread from the nuclear power plant, which Russia forces have controlled since soon after the war began. Attacks were reported over the weekend, not only in Russia-controlled territory adjacent to the plant along the left bank of the river, but along the Ukraine-controlled right bank, including the cities of Nikopol and each about 10 kilometers from the facility. Russian Defense Ministry spokesman Igor said Sunday that Ukrainian forces had attacked the plant twice over the past day and that shells fell near buildings storing reactor and fuel and radioactive waste. This is VOA News. At least 9 people were wounded in separate shootings at a bar in Los Angeles and a Sikh temple in Stockton, according to authorities. A man opened fire Sunday inside a crowded bar in Los Angeles neighborhood of Boyle Heights, wounding 6 people, including one who was in critical condition. Witnesses told police people were fighting at the Holiday Bar when a man pulled out a gun and fired into the crowd. Italian authorities are scrambling to relieve overcrowding and shelters after scores of boats carrying migrants reach Italy's southern shores and tiny islands over the weekend. Italian media said that nearly 50 boats arrived between Friday night and Saturday. Some of the vessels launched by migrant smugglers held as few as 8 passengers. Many of them were from Tunisia. Other boats reached the shores of the Italian mainland. The Italian news agency ANSA said Sunday that 92 migrants reached the Puglia in a sailboat. NASA's new moon rocket remains on track for a Monday liftoff despite a series of lightning strikes at the launch pad. Officials said Sunday that neither the rocket nor ground equipment suffered any damage as a result. 5 lightning strikes were confirmed on Saturday, hitting the 600-foot tower surrounding the rocket at Florida's Kennedy Space Center. 322-foot rocket is the most powerful ever built by NASA. It's poised to send an empty crew capsule into lunar orbit 50 years after NASA's Apollo program. Astronauts could return to the moon in a few years if the 6-week test flight goes well. Low fuel supplies in the U.S. Northeast are raising concerns that an extreme weather event could cause supply disruptions. The U.S. Department of Energy says diesel fuel and heating oil are over 60% below the 5-year average in New England. Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm is convening a meeting of regional governors after Labor Day to discuss the situation. She is also urging governors to take whatever steps they can to shore up supplies. An industry representative says the situation should improve in September and October. Recapping our top story, officials in Pakistan say deaths from widespread flooding have topped 1,000 since mid-June, and the country's climate minister called the deadly monsoon season a serious climate catastrophe. There is more at voanews.com. Again, voanews.com via remotes. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Today's Monday, August 29th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, Russia and Ukraine trade blame for attacks near Europe's largest nuclear power plant as the WHO plans to rebuild Kyiv's hospitals.
The UN Health Agency has recorded what it calls an unprecedented number of attacks on healthcare facilities in Ukraine. Over the past 6 months, it has verified 173 attacks on health facilities.
Russia blocks agreement on the final documents at conference reviewing the UN nuclear treaty.
The Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty is 50 years old and considered the cornerstone of nuclear disarmament, aimed at curbing the spread of nuclear weapons and ultimately achieving a world without them.
And officials in Pakistan say deaths from widespread flooding have topped 1,000 since mid-June. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Russia and Ukraine have traded blames for attacks at or near Europe's largest nuclear power plant. Reports Sunday intensified fears that the fighting could damage the plant and cause a massive radiation leak. Ukrainian officials say Russian strikes hit areas across the Dnipro River from the power plant. Russian forces took control of Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant soon after the war began. The claims from both sides of more attacks on Sunday could not be independently verified. Russia has blocked agreement on the final document at conference reviewing the UN nuclear treaty. Associated Press correspondent Ben Thomas reports.
The Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty is 50 years old and considered the cornerstone of nuclear disarmament, aimed at curbing the spread of nuclear weapons and ultimately achieving a world without them. 191 countries are party to the treaty and spent 4 weeks reviewing it. But that produced criticism of Russia's military takeover of Europe's largest nuclear power plant and its invasion of Ukraine. Russia and Ukraine have each accused the other of shelling the Zaporizhzhia plant. The conference's final document, which required unanimous approval, would have had the parties express grave concern for the military activities at or near the facility and other nuclear plants. Russia maintains there was no consensus and insists many countries objected to a host of issues. I'm Ben Thomas.
Citing unparalleled attacks on healthcare facilities, the World Health Organization said this week it is working to reconstruct Ukraine's health system. The system has suffered extensive damage from Russia since it invaded the country 6 months ago. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The UN Health Agency has recorded what it calls an unprecedented number of attacks on healthcare facilities in Ukraine. Over the past 6 months, it has verified 173 attacks on health facilities, which have resulted in nearly 100 deaths and 134 injuries. WHO's Ukraine representative, Jan Ohabich, told reporters this week that deaths and injuries continue to rise and will continue to do so until Russia ends the war.
While these attacks are not only the violation of international law, they also they're a barrier for many who need care as we are going through the war. So it is not only the supplies and others we need to support, we need to ensure also that the services are available. But also the healthcare workers are under immediate risk as we go through these times.
The United Nations says the war has killed more than 5,500 civilians and injured nearly 8,000, including almost 1,000 children. UNICEF says about 5 children on average are killed or injured every day. The Children's Agency says this is due to the indiscriminate use of weapons, often in heavily populated areas. Speaking by video link from an air raid shelter in Dnipro in eastern Ukraine, Habich says many people are on the move and many are suffering and need care. He said WHO is accelerating efforts to reach out and provide humanitarian assistance to millions of people across the country. At the same time, he said WHO is working on rebuilding Ukraine's shattered health system in coordination with national and local authorities.
He sees that reconstruction of the health system has to be part of the recovery of the whole country across all the sectors. And that's why we are currently concentrating both on the humanitarian response as well looking to the recovery, as we have seen in the health sector and other sectors.
To date, the World Health Organization has delivered more than 1,300 metric tons of medical supplies in Ukraine, including medicines for diabetes, cardiovascular disorders, and other non-communicable diseases. Habich said support also is being provided for mental health, trauma, and emergencies. He also said COVID-19 vaccines have been delivered to Ukraine in recent weeks in light of the increasing mortality rate across the country. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Killings of minority Hindu known as Pandits have resumed in Indian-administered Kashmir after a gap of 16 years, raising concerns about the safety of the minority group. For VOA, Mohit Ul Islam has more from Srinagar in India-administered Kashmir.
A pall of gloom descended on the Chotigam neighborhood August 16, after anti-India militants attacked two local members of the Pandit minority Hindu community. Sunil Kumar died on the spot, and his brother, Pintu Kumar, was critically injured while they were working in their apple orchard. In April, militants had tried to kill another family member at his medical store. A militant group, Kashmir Freedom Fighters, claimed responsibility for both the attacks and accused the victims of being agents of India's Bharatiya Janata Party or BJP government. Targeted killings of Pandits in Kashmir began in 1989 when armed resistance against Indian rule broke out. The killings led as many as 200,000 Pandits to leave their ancestral homes and settle in different parts of India, including the Jammu division of the disputed territory. In 2004, India announced a new policy for migrant Pandits. Hundreds secured government jobs and returned to Kashmir Valley. They were provided apartments in transit camps under tight security, which spurred many more Pandits to return to the region. However, the situation turned ugly after 2019 following the Narendra Modi-led BJP government's decision to revoke the limited autonomy of Kashmir. The killing of government employee Rahul Bhatt inside his office in central Kashmir's Budgam district in 2021 prompted many Pandit families to pack their bags and try to flee the valley, only to be stopped and detained inside the transit camps by the local police. Members of the Pandit community believe labeling them as Indian agents and Muslims and as Pakistani supporters is the root cause of the present situation in the Kashmir Valley, which needs to be addressed at individual and collective level. They also believe majority community must come forward and stress the teachings of Islam regarding safeguarding minority. Voice of America contacted P.K. Paul, Divisional Commissioner of Kashmir, and the Inspector General of Police in Kashmir, K. Vijay Kumar, for their comments, but none of them responded to the repeated calls and text messages. Mohit Ul Islam for Voice of America News, Srinagar, Indian-administered Kashmir.
Libya's capital was quiet early on Sunday, a day after the war's fighting there for 2 years killed 32 people and injured 159. This as forces aligned with a parliament-backed administration failed to dislodge the Tripoli-based government. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Clouds of smoke floated over the Libyan capital, Tripoli, Saturday afternoon as militias loyal to the country's two rival governments exchanged bouts of gunfire in the center of the city. Libya's Red Crescent Society is calling for a humanitarian corridor to be opened to the center of the capital to evacuate civilians that have been trapped between rival fighters. Libyan media is reporting injuries while asking citizens to donate blood. Saudi-owned Al Arabiya TV reported that incoming Prime Minister Fathi Bashagha, who was named early this year by the country's eastern-based parliament, asked outgoing Prime Minister Abdelhamid Dbeiba to leave the capital, while Dbeiba responded that he was too busy dealing with the country's business. VOA could not independently confirm the quote. Libya analyst Mohamed Asmar told Arab media that the Dbeiba's supporters were trying to prevent Bashagha's forces from occupying the capital, and Bashagha was trying to force the Dbeiba's militia forces to withdraw from the city. She says that fighting is taking place in a small, heavily populated area of approximately 3 square kilometers near the center of the capital, and rival militias have turned against each other. Libya security analyst Aya Burwaila tells VOA that the dismal political and security situation is the logical conclusion of 10 years of predatorial foreign and domestic policies in Libya that saw public funds being funneled to foreign-backed Islamist groups by successive unelected governments in the country. Since 2012, she says, the capital has been occupied by a militia cartel that has refused to disarm and has terrorized citizens, engaged in human trafficking, and sabotaged state institutions. Arab media showed video of a convoy of militia fighters loyal to Prime Minister Bashagha from the coastal city of Misrata heading to Tripoli to join the fighting. The exact situation inside the capital remains confused, with reports of at least one militia changing sides. Mohamed al-Manefi, who heads Libya's presidential council, reportedly returned from a visit to neighboring Tunisia as the fighting spread. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Thank you, Edward. A new research from U.S. universities is predicting almost unbearable heat for Australians living in the country's north. It warns that if global emission targets are not met, northern Australians will, most of these, face dangerous temperatures capable of causing heat exhaustion and death. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Research from Harvard University and the University of Washington has projected billions of people in the world's tropical and subtropical regions could face dangerously high temperatures on most days by 2100. The research found that without adaptation measures, this would greatly increase the incidence of heat-related illnesses and reduce outdoor working capacity in many regions where subsistence farming is important. For Australia, it could mean sustained climate stress in northern parts of the country within 80 years. The southern half of the continent is expected to fare slightly better, but is still expected to face far more heat waves. Harvard climate scientist and study author Lucas Vargas Cepitello warned that without major emissions reduction, parts of northern Australia would likely experience heat waves that are without precedent. Heat waves are Australia's deadliest natural hazard. Simon Quilty, a health researcher at the Australian National University, says parts of northern Australia are already facing the consequences of warmer temperatures.
The hotter it is, the higher the mortality rate. And so extreme temperatures are already causing quite a significant amount of mortality in the Northern Territory baseline. But there's other indirect things, destabilizing workforces.
The US study was published in the journal Communications, Earth and Environment. Its stark predictions come as the Australian government opens 46,000 square kilometres of state-owned waters for more oil and gas exploration. Officials say the move is vital for the economy and meeting the energy needs of Australians. But critics accuse the centre-left Labor government of kowtowing to the fossil fuel industry. A reliance on coal and gas for much of its electricity generation has made Australia one of the world's worst per capita emitters of greenhouse gases. Labor, elected in May, has promised decisive climate action. For the first time, Australia has a legislated target to cut carbon pollution. Earlier this month, new laws were passed by the Federal Parliament in Canberra to cut emissions by 43% by 2030. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
In other news, officials in Pakistan say deaths from widespread flooding have topped 1,000 since mid-June, and the country's climate minister called the deadly monsoon season, quote, a serious climate catastrophe, unquote. Flash flooding from the heavy rains has washed away villages and crops as soldiers and rescue workers evacuated stranded residents to the safety of relief camps and provided food to thousands of displaced Pakistanis. The country's National Disaster Management Authority reported Sunday the death toll since the monsoon season began earlier than normal this year. In mid-June, deaths reached 1,061 people after new fatalities were reported in several different provinces. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinua Ofo in Washington. African Americans have been involved in filmmaking since the early days of the movie industry. A new exhibition at the Academy Museum of Motion Pictures explores the vibrant history, much of it forgotten. Michael Sullivan reports from Los Angeles.
A classic film clip from 1898 shows a black couple kissing. Rediscovered just 5 years ago, it's shown with other early film clips, part of the exhibition Regeneration, Black Cinema, 1898 to 1971, at the Academy Museum of Motion Pictures, a comprehensive film museum that opened last year. And this exhibition tells an important story, say museum officials. Academy Museum President Jacqueline Stewart.
We really wanted to take the time and the space to show people just how long black artists have been involved in filmmaking.
Looking at black entertainers and filmmakers who faced discrimination in Hollywood, but were part of a major alternative industry that produced, says co-creator Rhea Combs of the National Portrait Gallery in Washington, D.C.
Independent film productions, primarily for an African-American audience, by African filmmakers.
On display are scripts from early films, costumes from Stormy Weather, the 1943 musical with Lena Horne, and Porgy and Bess from 1959, starring Sammy Davis Jr., and poster after poster of feature films. Co-curator Rhea Combs.
And many of them have been lost to time, but we have these posters as wonderful reminders of this really robust period of film production.
Most films were shot on a low budget in many different genres. Co-curator Doris Berger of the Academy Museum.
We have cowboy films, we have adventure films, we have dramas.
Including the 1939 film Reform School with Louise Beavers, who appeared in more than 100 films and on television. These movies were made across the United States, drawing on a national pool of talent. Also on display, soundies from the 1940s, short films projected inside movie jukeboxes that showcased black musicians and dancers. Some black performers, like the Nicholas Brothers, were well known on the musical stage. Paul Robeson, a concert artist, became an imposing figure on the Hollywood big screen. By the 1960s, more films were exploring racial issues, with Harry Belafonte and Sidney Poitier, among others. Poitier won an Oscar for Best Actor for the 1963 film Lilies of the Field, among the many stories recounted here. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
As fall draws near in the U.S., monarch butterflies in the eastern part of the country are primed for their winter surge into Mexico. Conservationists worry that the monarchs are in peril from climate change and farming, but the science isn't settled. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias looks at the complexities of counting and protecting the butterflies.
The migratory monarch butterflies in North America are at significant risk of extinction. That is how the International Union for Conservation of Nature, or IUCN, recently judged the butterflies' status. The group's designation carries no legal weight to force conservation steps. Monarchs already enjoy protections in Mexico, while Canada and the United States are still studying whether to officially designate them as endangered.
See, we got a monarch over here.
Veteran insect ecologist Chip Taylor believes monarch butterflies as a species will survive around the world and even in parts of the United States.
This decision by IUCN doesn't recognize at all the fact that the population really increased tremendously in California last year, and it increased in Mexico as well.
A study published in June found that monarchs overall are thriving. That is based on a massive analysis of breeding monarchs counted over 25 summers. Andy Davis is a research scientist at the University of Georgia.
There's this sort of weird psychological trend where people actually want to believe monarchs are in trouble rather than believe that they're doing fine, which is what our study showed.
The differing opinions about monarchs draw on different data. Instead of northern surveys counting breeding adults, IUCN and others use data from the forests where monarchs overwinter in central Mexico. Veronica Valderas Iglesias for VOA News,
Arlington, Virginia.
Hi, this is Larry London, and Border Crossings is with you every day, playing requests and dedications starting at 1500 Universal. And throughout the month of August, I'm giving away the new Now 83 CD, which features Kendrick Lamar, Dove Cameron, Tyga, Imagine Dragons, Shawn Mendes, Diplo, and the list goes on and on. The Weeknd, Camila Cabello, Doja Cat. It's all on Border Crossings at 1500 Universal. Listen to Win right here on The Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinua Adofo in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Nearly 20 million people living in the Horn of Africa are facing a crisis of food insecurity. The region has suffered four consecutive droughts and is looking at a fifth come October. The Horn region has two rainy seasons per year, said USAID Administrator Samantha Power, who recently visited some of the most seriously affected regions in Somalia and Kenya. This is the first time in history, she stressed at a recent talk here in Washington, that the Horn of Africa has suffered four consecutive failed rainy seasons.
Today, pasture lands are turning to dust, and in near biblical scenes, weakened farm animals are dying of disease. To date, at least 7 million livestock have already died in Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia. There just isn't enough water to quench their thirst or enough grass to feed them.
Through the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, the government of the United States is providing critical humanitarian assistance totaling $1.2 billion to the three most severely affected countries in the region, Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia. Early humanitarian investments are critical to saving lives. In Ethiopia this year alone, the United States is providing $668 million in support of more than 8.1 million people whose survival is threatened by the historic drought. In Kenya, the drought has pushed more than 4 million people to the edge of starvation, with communities in the arid and semi-arid land countries having been hit the hardest. By the end of May, some 70% of crops were reported lost, along with at least 2.4 million head of livestock. USAID is providing to the people of Kenya nearly $255 million in emergency food and other critical humanitarian and development assistance. And in Somalia, 7.1 million people are affected by this crisis. More than 3 million agricultural animals have died, and 1.4 million children are facing acute malnutrition through the end of the year. USAID is providing $476 million in critical humanitarian and development aid to the people of Somalia, bringing the U.S. total assistance for this year to more than $707 million. This humanitarian aid illustrates the United States' continuing commitment to the welfare of the people of Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia. We urge other partner governments, said Administrator Power, to join us in significantly increasing their own commitments to prevent widespread famine and millions of deaths.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.